This week on Rogue, we've got Louise McSharry writing about giving up on mother guilt. We have an extract from Nisha Dolan's forthcoming Exciting Times. And we've got a chocolate-covered honeycomb recipe that sounds divine. We also have guest contributor this week, Lauren Shannon Jones, who is a writer and theatre maker. And in her beautiful essay, Agape, she details getting engaged and going into lockdown. So subscribe now for just €4 a month and get a weekly issue of Rogue right into your inbox. Coming up on this week's show, we talk Sally Rooney's Normal People. Jen's got a Today I Learned that will crush the gentle spirits of any vegans listening. Apologies in advance, guys. And in Bed In or Bin It, we rake over all the cultural delicacies we've been consuming the week gone. We are joined this week by our guest, Liadan Hines, who brings a certain class to proceedings, I noticed. So come on in. Let's start the show. The new voice you hear amongst us is author, journalist, podcaster, and co-founder of Rogue Collective, Liadan Hines.
Hello.
Woo! What a weird stilted clapping we all did on the Zoom. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's so lovely to see two faces that I'm not living with. New people.
Or related to in any way.
It's amazing.
I mean, truly divine, isn't it?
I find now when I'm interviewing people, there's this really awkward kind of bit at the end where I'm like, and anything else that you want to say? Like, you don't need to go. We can still chat.
Yeah, like, no rush.
They're closing the screen.
Yeah, they're like, good and goodbye.
Yeah, that was all. That was all. Don't leave me. So yeah, great to see you both.
I find that it's like a race to leave the Zoom meetings. So like Jen and I were at a meeting last night and I now clocked that you have to be the first one out or else you get caught in an awkward goodbye is without end.
What I do... guys, best tip ever. Yeah. When you're in that, what you do is you start a sentence. So let's say I'm doing it now and I'll say, oh guys, okay, bye, great to see you. Oh, by the way, I was thinking about a thing, and then you hit leave meeting. So it looks like you were cut off.
Genius.
I have a really
And they are just
one,
left hanging.
Hanging. Wanting to get back. I usually sit really far from the camera because when I'm recording for the podcast, so I have to do this whole bye, bye, and I'm like going towards the camera to particularly awkward.
You should just slither off the back of your chair and kind of...
I should have a stick that I can like hit it down from my distance. So that's one.
And how are you getting on, Leah? How is lockdown Leah doing?
I mean, you know the way...
She's a persona. We all have our own lockdown persona, but lockdown Leah has alliteration to her.
Yes, true. But like our personas that change by the minute, do you not find? Like, or else you think you're doing fine. And I went for a walk this week. I don't go every day because we're cocooning, so I kind of feel like that gives me an excuse to just be quite lazy. So I went for a walk and I thought, oh, that's great, I'm getting out listening to my music. And then I came to this really narrow bit in the path and this couple were like walking towards me and they didn't go into single file. So I really passive aggressively stood there with my hands up waiting. And I could have just waited for them to pass, but I didn't. I then took it upon myself to walk into the middle of the road on a bend, on a hill, couldn't see oncoming traffic, like absolutely no need for this. And just after I passed them, without any planning, I shouted, you wouldn't walk in single file, would you?
I know. It's amazing.
The words have started before you totally. Have even thought them.
Yeah,
like,
didn't even know
we're all
I was
out
doing.
Of control.
I have.
And if you had died in that display of high dudgeon, to be honest, I would have said worth it.
I would have died just to
enjoy making them feel that bad about it. I would see that as a well spent death.
The best is just a shouldn't you be cocooning? That's so insulting. I've used that a couple of times. Just under your
Can
breath.
I see some ID, please?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but in the face, you definitely look like you should be cocooning.
You look ill. You look ill and old. And you're directly in my way.
All right. Well, Leah, it's your first time on the show, but I am sure you're a long-time listener. So you know that we often kick off with Today I Learned from Miss Jen O'Dwyer. Do you have a Today I Learned?
Yeah, I have one. And it's a bit of I don't know. You may or may not like this one. So you've heard of an avocado.
Certainly have.
And you might have heard of a vegan.
Oh, well, I mean, you wouldn't spend more than a couple of seconds in one's presence without hearing of them.
Personally, I wouldn't spend a second of my presence in either of them.
Excuse me, avocados and vegans number a huge portion of our listenership, Jen, so put it away.
Well, I'm here to tell you, if you are a vegan and this avocado is part of your diet, you're not a vegan. I'll tell you that much.
Uh-oh.
So, what I have learned this week, now the Vegan Association of the World has sort of disputed this somewhat, but I'll power through anyway. This is just a today I learned. I don't know everything about it.
Did Gemma O'Doherty teach you this fact?
No,
is this
no,
from
no.
the Gemma O'Doherty School of Facts?
So avocados, notoriously difficult to grow. Did you know that? Now you do.
No.
Right. So what they've done to kind of assist their growth in order to, you know, how we've all ramped up our... Anyway, we need a lot of avocados. They've started to stuff a load of bees onto vans and kind of, in an unnatural way, pollinate their farms of avocados. So this is the element.
So it's like that's similar pollination.
Exactly. Yeah, so...
So these bees are kind of in slavery, basically.
Well, yeah. So that's... If you're a very, very strict vegan, I think, yeah, you probably would steer clear. Unless you can really be... Unless you're growing your own avocados. Mm. But even then...
you'd absolutely be safe.
I imagine you would have...
You're taking avocados. Except... We've
so little right now, and you have crushed the spirits of many vegans.
Do you know what
else?
They
were already on the floor, weakened by their plant-based diet.
Broccoli in the same boat.
I could use broccoli.
I love a brock. Love a brock.
A brock.
I do enjoy broccoli. Underrated. Yeah.
That's my today I learned. Don't you think that's interesting? I think that's fascinating. So this all came out on an episode of I Am an Avid QI Watcher. Do you ever watch it? Game show called QI. Mm. Used to be hosted by Stephen Fry.
Yes, I'm familiar. Yeah.
Now Sandy from The Great British Bake Off is doing it. She's very good as well. I highly recommend it. So that's where I learned it. And then I was like, that's very quite interesting altogether. But then I read a lot of angry vegan blog posts on this as well. Contentious. Take it whatever way you want to.
So have you stirred the hornet's nest of angry vegans?
We'll
and we're going to
out.
Have a bloody V-hive, a vegan hive of angry, irate people coming at us in the comments. Please
Maybe.
Do. It's always good for engagement. And I think it's so devastating now what you've done here, Jen, because I've kind of a backbone of vegan sort of dessert foods would be the avocado.
Gosh.
A lot of them are relying heavily of an avocado to create a chocolate mousse, for example.
It's the moist maker, isn't it?
It's the creamy maker. I mean, I'm never more than a few feet from a cookbook, and I have here vegan-ish
Holly White.
Now, Holly White isn't stringent about her veganism at all, hence vegan-ish, and it's quite nice read if you just want to dabble. But let's just check the index. Oh my God, avocados are mentioned. Avocados get a whole column of this index here. I don't know if you can see that.
It is ish, Sophie. It is ish.
Raw chocolate mousse, raw chocolate heaven, passion fruit pie, coconut shake. I mean, every sweet treat here, basically.
Avocado
reliant.
It's slimy. I'll give it that much.
This may be your most controversial today I learned yet. That hasn't involved bestiality.
Maybe you're welcome.
Including. Well, thank you so much for that. I have a come again that I think we are all extremely ready for, especially as it was supplied to a WhatsApp group we're all members of by our own Leah Den Hines here. Thank you very much, Leah.
My pleasure.
So obviously, it's been a big week in the lives of many normal people, premiered on Irish TV screens earlier in the week. It is, of course, the TV adaptation of Sally Rooney's Booker Prize longlisted novel of the same name. Now, few people tuned in to Joe and were quite upset, as is everyone who ever tunes into Joy. Joe. I'd love someone to tune into Joe to just really big up something they're really happy about.
I heard somebody doing that the other day and Joe was having none of it. He was like, yeah. Like, come on.
Back to the misery. Yeah, he is such a bloody tragedy trawler, isn't he? Like,
they just weren't being like, heightened enough. They were just like, I thought I saw this and it was nice and I just thought it might be kind of positive for people. Joe couldn't get the slot done quick enough.
Can't get on board with this. I mean, was it not disgraceful? Like, if it's not disgraceful, you're not getting on air. Anyway, a fair few people thought that the sex in Normal People was a disgrace. Something you would expect to see in a porno movie, said one listener. I think it's been revealed that Normal People has exposed sex to a vast swathe of the population who've never heard of sex. I think I wouldn't like a daughter of mine to be engaging in sexual promiscuity before she was married.
Yes.
Came in from Tommy. Tommy dominated the airwaves on this whole segment. I have a little clip.
It's not normal for your teenage daughter to be getting into bed with another school kid. That's not normal.
Perfect. Tommy cannot disguise his incredible erection. That's what's happening.
Tommy watched the whole thing, didn't he? Like, Tommy's...
Yeah, he did.
He didn't turn away in horror. He kept going, kept watching.
I'd say he probably went for a rewatch to take some notes. People fornicating in the streets, they'll be.
Did you know Tommy's that fornicating meant sex before marriage, outside of wedlock? I didn't know that.
No.
Oh, really?
I thought it was just general sex.
Yeah.
Just another fun phrase.
Facts today, Jen.
Well, I learned it from that program, from listening to that stuff.
I do enjoy a teacher called Molly who was basically pleading for the word fornication to be just left in the past because it has place in contemporary society.
Yeah.
Thank you, Molly.
I saw Roisin Ingle tweeted today something about, you know, that this is a reflection of, like, this is how it was really quite recently. Do you know that this is how repressed and that these people, as much as we are disagreeing with them and kind of all laughing and finding it much needed entertainment, like, they are just reflecting how incredibly repressed we were, or, you know, about sex. And that's kind of like that was the norm really not that long ago for Irish people.
And that it still is for a lot of Irish people. Yeah.
It's like the volume has been turned down on some of that section of society, and then they really came out to play and fornicate on Lifeline this week, and it was mad. It was like they were just continuing conversation from like 1995.
Time traveling.
I find the whole thing mad about sex and kids and that. So, as you know, I have form on this, like, that, you know, that kids shouldn't know about sex at all and that it's really kind of bad and scary for them. I find that, I disagree with that so
but
so
I feel
entirely.
Like that slightly obviously belongs in a different it. Like, it slightly belongs in a different conversation, because the people who are kind of calling it out and saying how it was inappropriate for children, it's like, it's not a children's television show.
Well, that's true.
It is not on at like 2 p.m. in the middle of CBeebies or whatever. Or RTÉ Junior, imagine.
Do you think that the reason that a lot of the shock, I think, like, there has been sexier things on Irish television.
Totally,
but it's the Irish element of it is what's really kind of got to people. And I think it is, it's hit a nerve because it was so well done. This is kind of the kind of genuine, like, it's a real emotional reaction, and that people are, it's great. I mean, it's worked.
It's obviously scared people in some way. And maybe, like you're saying, Jen, the kind of realness is that there are people who have teenage, you know, they're seeing their own kids or their, you know, the people they know, because it's looked. I would like to just clarify, I'm not saying we should be like showing porn to children or like what I'm saying, teaching kids about sex, but I do just find that kind of baffling. But yeah, maybe, yeah, you're right that they're, it's, and if they're angry, it's because they're scared. So it's, you know.
But it's also, I felt like, so there was talk about that, so the two main characters, for anyone who hasn't caught up yet, are Connell and Marianne, and they're sixth years. And they start a relationship kind of slightly outside of a school. She is an outsider. He's kind of like, you know, the big, like, guy hero and real smart guy, loads of friends. Marianne has no friends, and which is completely unbelievable, but we'll get back onto that in a minute. She's too hot, basically, to survive secondary school without having friends. Sorry, it's miscast. But anyway, and they kind of embark on like a secret sexual relationship. And I agree with Jen. I think it was done so well. It gave me so much nostalgia. I thought it could have been, for sure, like a bit more awkward. Might have been a bit more true to life for teenage interactions. But overall, I thought it was done very, like, handled really well and sensitively. And it's not like... I think it's quite like sensual and not gratuitous, like in any way. And like, I mean, it couldn't be remotely, it's not even porn adjacent, Maura, like from a half scroll. So
well, I wouldn't say that. Down. I think you could rub one out while watching this, no problem.
If you hadn't been consuming Pornhub with the intensity and vigor of myself and Jen, yes, this could possibly get you over the line. I'll say that.
Oh, come on. So did you not think it was absolutely max sexy? Yeah, I thought it was amazing.
I mean, I thought it was sexy, but like, I thought it was quite, I actually thought it was quite prim. It was quite a lot of like intense gaze, which wouldn't be my kind of favorite genre of erotic media.
Let it linger,
also,
Lenny.
You know the way they're in sixth year. So there was some debate about, are they 17 or are they 18? And I think that that's caught in people's heads a lot. And I kind of get that, because I think if I'm watching two 17-year-olds, I do feel a bit more uncomfortable than if I'm just like, no, they're 18. We're all fine. This is all above board. But like, what do you guys think? Do you think that kind of makes a difference?
I think the fact that they looked like adults, I mean,
yes, yeah, they did.
Yeah. That mattered. And I think that,
yeah, and they behaved in it with an articulacy.
Yeah.
Like a friend of mine who's a teacher in a secondary school, that was her first comment, was like, no teenagers are this confident and this articulate. So like, it didn't feel like you were watching
children having sex.
Not my first time anyway.
I have to say, I for me, I don't know, it looks like I have had that sex. I've been in that bedroom. It just really, the Imogen Heap, the soundtrack.
Yeah,
I was like,
the music is brilliant.
This is my experience. I just felt not like I did, but just visually, and the you know, he really kind of
the bedroom and the bed, exactly, the single
bed. Posters and the single bed. Oh my god, yeah. And I thought, like, and I think this point has been made quite a lot, but I think it dealt with the kind of consent side of sex really well. Like, it actually is providing quite a healthy blueprint. Now, I've only watched the first two episodes and I've read the book, so I know that as we go on, there's more complex kind of attitudes to sex explored in this story. But so far, say, the first two episodes of Connell and Marianne, like, their encounter seemed like a really good kind of, you know, checking. Like, it was just a good kind of, here, if you're going to do sex, kids, like, check in with each other, and that all seemed to be done really well. Have you guys watched beyond the first two? So in a controversial move, it's available in full on the BBC player, and RTE player is only seeding it out weekly now. And obviously many believe that this is a bigger outrage than the time the English stole our corn.
I watched them with my husband, who could not watch it, and I couldn't figure out what was happening. He was pretending to be bored, but I think he was uncomfortable. It was definitely like, it just felt a bit like, I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I absolutely loved everything about it. And sometimes, you know, when you're watching someone that's really enjoying a thing, it can be very fucking annoying to you.
Yeah.
And that turns you off the thing that's happening.
Weirdly, it made me want to watch Circle of Friends again, which is...
Oh,
I mean, could that be... you know? I just want to go into our, I mean, in some ways so different, like his accent, Chris, what's his name, the American accent actor doing the worst accent, Irish accent of all time.
Chris. Character is it? Oh, is it the brother?
No, the main guy in Circle of Friends.
Sorry. Chris O'Donnell.
Yes.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about someone in Normal People.
No, Normal People, they were all amazing. I just thought they were so pitch perfect.
I felt like, can you not hear something? Now, I'm about to go into a deep rant about the main actress, and it's not personal. Daisy Edgar Jones. And she is so compelling, like, do you know those actresses that you're just gazing at? You kind of like fall into them. You're very drawn to, you know, that kind of just magnetism that they
have.
But
I think it's also the way it's shot, Sophs. Like, we're supposed to be, there's just so much silence and so many let it lingers. It's really focusing in. And I think it's easier for him to be more likable in this gig than it is for her.
I do think he's particularly natural as well. He's a really good actor.
Oh, well, to be honest, I don't think he's doing much acting. It does feel like at least is putting an Irish accent on, which is an acting thing.
Yeah.
And I think she did that brilliantly.
Brilliantly, yeah, brilliantly. I hear
something in her accent. I can't believe you guys are saying that. There's something that snags on me every time she talks.
Well, I read that she
Northern Irish.
Well, they wanted,
and they haven't addressed it.
No, he had a specific accent in mind, Lenny Abramson, but they also didn't mind if there was a twang of something, because the idea was she is a different class than the rest of them. She's kind of separate from them. They also worked with a coach for the sex scenes, an intimacy coach, I think it was. So they kind of read the scenes loads, really get to know them. And then they'd practice them with their clothes on. So by the time, and they kind of choreograph the whole thing. And then they finally do it with the clothes off. So by the time they come to do that, I obviously watched it and then went and read every article I could find. You know, they're like, no more to watch, I'll go deep. And so they totally choreograph it. So then by the time they're actually acting it out, they are so familiar with it that it made it. They said they were really, like, really comfortable with each other. It was kind of, that really helped.
I do think that the acting is stunningly good. I think Paul Mescal is acting, and I think he's brilliant.
I thought the casting was stunningly good.
I disagree. It just is jarring with me. So, like, I'm really familiar with the book. Like, I definitely read it at least twice, and I reviewed it at the time. So, like, you do spend a lot of time with something when you're reviewing it. Mm-hmm. And always in my mind, Marianne, as Jen said, she's supposed to be the anti-hero and an unlikable, you know, female lead. But to my mind, she was always kind of like, she had kind of wonky teeth. She wasn't the beauty that Daisy Edgar Jones is.
This is the television, though. I mean, they needed for people to be feel attracted.
Yeah, I know.
Like, is that the kind of like, let's put glasses on her, and then she takes them off, and oh my god, she's a supermodel, and no one.
I know, that's what they're doing with that French plait that she's wearing in school every day.
Like, wow.
Do you not think that it's a little bit, a tiny bit hard to suspend disbelief about her being this kind of outsider, butt of all the jokes, and being that stunning?
Yeah.
Like, we've all been to secondary schools. We all went to mixed secondary schools. Like, no matter how challenged in personality a hot girl might have been, she was alpha when we were 18, when we were 17.
Agreed.
So I just find that a little bit hard. That's all. It's a slight criticism of an otherwise brilliant show. Really enjoying. I love Lenny Abramson has this way of shooting Ireland that's not embarrassing. Do you know what I mean? I know I shouldn't say that. I know I'm not allowed to say it, but like,
No, do you know the way? It's not like an ad.
Exactly. It's not beautiful. Like this kind of Irishian sort of torture. No shade to Circle of Friends. We all love it for its own special reasons. But like, even with what Richard did, his feature from a couple of years ago that was set in Dublin and set in kind of Dublin rugby circles, he had this like gorgeous way of kind of bringing this kind of Scandi, muted Scandi cool to Ireland. I'd love to know if it's the same director of photography. It looks it. Who just kind of manages to really recreate this kind of contemporary feel that chimes with our lives rather than the Darby O'Gill and the Little People would have been, you know.
Has Sally Rooney given her
She's involved, Jen.
2 cents.
Oh, she's a co-writer, yeah.
Okay. So she obviously liked it.
Yeah, I remember that she was the co-writer of 6 of them. Don't know why I'm feeling the need to hold up the fingers there.
I noticed that. Episode 1 had a co-writer. Episode 2, it was just Sally.
Yeah. She definitely, your man Paul Mescal met her for coffee when he'd been cast. He was cast first and then Daisy. Sorry, I've gone really handy here.
Wouldn't you love if Paul Mescal needed to meet you for coffee?
He just wanted to get her okay. Yeah. It must be really great to be Sally Rooney.
Oh, yeah.
So unimpeachable. created this amazing thing. Only idiots. Well, go there.
Oh, we'll go there in a minute.
So they had coffee and she gave him the nod and...
They've got Marco Rowe is another writer's credit, and he would have written Intermission, which is another old favourite. Have you guys watched Intermission?
Of course.
Which is Cillian Murphy's, one of his first outings. So Marco Rowe's a playwright as well, and they've also got Alice Birch, who's another playwright. So I think there's a lot of collaboration with it. And so on to, I suppose, so... It's interesting you were asking, has Sally Rooney given her 2 cents, Jen? Mm. Sally Rooney has more or less retired from talking to people on the internet, and I don't blame her
perfect
at all. She used to be quite active and outspoken on Twitter. A few years ago, a couple of years ago. Because I remember around the time Normal People came out, and she gave an interview where she basically just... I mean, was she lukewarm about one of the Irish greats? She basically didn't fellate W.B. Yeats in an interview.
Fucking break.
And then, I mean, some reply guys on Twitter immediately started atting her. And I think that she's just, well, I don't think she like stormed off Twitter. I think she just was like, ugh, waste of time
kind
of thing.
She also said one of her characters in the book Conversation with Friends criticizes Yeats I think it was in the New York Times or the New Yorker profile. She says something like, well, if one wanted to express some of one's opinions, one could of course put them in to the, you know, the mouths of your characters, referring to that when they asked her about the Yeats thing.
Further to her kind of not really being that available to talk about these things on Twitter and things like that, there was a frankly deranged article online this week all about Normal People. And I mean, it swept Twitter at a time in our lives when we really needed it most. I almost was wondering, was this some kind of act of misguided martyrdom on the part of the writer to just give us something good and fun to bitch about right when we really need it? I'm referring, of course, to the piece that appeared on thefence.com earlier in the week. What was the headline? I'm just trying to get it up.
I have it here. It says Conversation with Friends about Sally Rooney, an epistolary inquiry into the zeitgeist, the novels, the publishers, and me.
Also a writer.
Yeah, the first line is, I'm the same age as Sally Rooney. I'm a writer too, with 3 abandoned novels to my name. As a deeply jealous person, I've found Rooney mania a bitter pill to swallow over the past few years. The literary success of any of my contemporaries causes me pain, but this was unprecedented.
Now, can I say, excellent opening paragraph. Like, I am in, and I was with her immediately. I was like, brilliant. That's a brilliant opener. I love that she's just like, yes, I'm jealous. Of course I am. And I thought, I'm about to read an interesting deep dive, potentially into kind of the nature of sort of professional jealousy, the nature of success and publishing. Instead, what follows is just... frankly, one of the most immature and poorly argued opinion pieces I've ever seen. What did you guys think?
That was
embarrassing. What did you think of the opening paragraph? Mm. Did you just think...
Like you, I was like, oh, that's funny. She's being honest. And then she's going to come back around at the end of the article. But she didn't. She dug in. She dug in so far. It was eye-wateringly bad. And she kept trawling through mates for somebody to agree with
her. Such a bizarre premise for a piece, to just be like, I'm really triggered and bothered by this person, and now I'm going to try and dig up other people who will justify me
feeling like that, and I'm going to make an article out of it.
So, yeah.
I mean, I did, I'm sorry to be this person, but like, as someone who's just written a book, that like, I'm a writer too. I've got a book in my head. Like, no, that's not the same thing as getting up at six, you know, that, like, so I definitely had a different take from the intro. I was just like, oh God, writing two books as Sally Rooney has done and having huge success is, don't equate yourself with that. It's embarrassing.
But I think three abandoned novels to my name is
astounding.
It's actually a very good claim. I actually
do my name,
and I say that as a person with some books to my name, and I do think, you know, it's actually good for once for someone to be like just putting the failure of novel writing out front and center, because we don't get enough of that. And anyone who has written a book probably has at least a couple of failures to their name kicking around, if not more. But I thought it was ballsy as hell. Do you know what it really kept reminding me of, actually, which maybe we'll see it or not? Do you remember the essay that appeared on The Cut earlier, or in the middle of last year, about Caroline Calloway?
Yeah.
From her jealous ex-friend.
That's right.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to me because I felt really like what we're reading here is something that somebody was like, this is going to be a sure thing. This is going to get eyes on it. This is going to raise hackles, and I am going to be in the spotlight, you know, for whatever negative reason, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? It's totally a real weird energy to it.
Yeah, it felt like somebody revealing themselves almost in a way that was compulsive, that they could, like, it could be such a bad revelation to make about yourself.
But that's it. Like Sophie said, it was so obviously just looking for attention and nonsense bullshit. Like, she couldn't possibly.
She's taken it off her Twitter, I've noticed. She had it on her Twitter.
I'm sure people went fucking mad about it.
I'd say the smackback was worse than she thought. I think that Sally Rooney genuinely is a human. Although she seems like a success bot, she is a human, and I hope that this hasn't hurt her feelings, and I hope that she's laughing her ass off at it, and I suspect she probably is, because she is a person of enormous intelligence and talent.
I mean, it made me feel like, why are people so bothered about Sally Rooney? Like, is it that she seems like a kind of generally unapologetic person, which is not always the case for, you know, woman. Well, sorry, that's exactly what I mean. Thank you. Yeah, like that. And is that something that bothers people, that she never...
Definitely.
Like, what was her first essay? It was about debating, and it was like, even if you beat me, I'm still the best. And like, is there something about that attitude in a woman that people are like, I can't...
Oh, yeah. Back absolutely revolted by.
I also did think, and I don't know if this is appropriate to say, but I did go on the girl, the account of the writer who wrote it, and she had at the time a piece about her own recent nervous breakdown that was written in the Sunday Times, and I don't know, there was part of me that just felt like, has this person been slightly hung out to dry? In that, to me, the piece read as something that was a person, you know, who was not... You know, it wasn't a clever... Like you said, I'm going to write about jealousy. You know, it was... way rawer than that, and just a little part of me felt like, should her editors have maybe said to her, is, you know, and look, I know it did what it probably was supposed to do, it got them, we're all talking about it, I'd never heard of The Fence, but I read the piece she wrote for the Sunday Times, and it talked about her own addiction problems. This is the writer of the piece about Sally Rooney, and I did just think, oh, like, that seems like someone who's kind of vulnerable in her own right, and now is part of a Twitter storm,
and is she being exploited for
and
clicks?
Is there something and I mean I say, you know, like, I'm not being,
but I don't know, would you, for example, apply that to a male writer?
I probably wouldn't feel the same empathy or sympathy as a male writer, because I'm not looking at...
Yeah, you wouldn't be looking for reasons to excuse them. You'd be like, there's a man being a man.
You see part of yourself in some way, or do you know what I mean? You're just more likely to be. But
I think what happened was, she was having this conversation with friends in her WhatsApp groups, and she was like, I'm, you know, everyone must be sort of behind doors saying or thinking something along these lines, you know.
Dolly Alderson did tweet that, did something like, there was, she made some reference out of like, it's like writing an article about what you'll just text in your bitchiest WhatsApp group.
Oh yes, Daisy Buchanan, I think.
That's it, yes.
Your most mean-spirited WhatsApp friends. Yes. Yes, completely.
Yeah.
I thought actually Rosemary McCabe made quite a good point about this, that basically there did kind of like develop this kind of, you know, dichotomy of like, you adore or you loathe Sally Rooney, and it is, you know, it was kind of almost like a personality stand-in for people on Twitter. I'm a Rooney fan, or she's overrated, and it was the she's overrated people kind of, it was almost really defining their sort of intellect that they believe she's overrated.
I absolutely loved Normal People and absolutely hated Conversation with Friends. And I feel like that kind of makes me special in some way, that I'm like both a lover and a hater. I can have two contradictory beliefs about Sally Rooney at the one time.
What about the argument that this writer made in her piece about, okay, she's being lauded as a kind of literary genius, and then she took individual quotes from the book that, did you see, do you remember that piece?
Yes, she isolated sentences from Normal People and reproduced them in the piece. Yes.
Yeah, and it's just incredibly petty. Yes.
So petty.
Like, page 36, Norma, and she went through all of her books.
And like, you could take anyone's sentences and pull out around, and they'd be like, oh yeah, that's idiotic.
I know.
Out of context, yes. Like, it's really fantastic.
Yeah.
But I did think there's a simplified way of writing that she writes in. I guess that's just how she writes.
It's a spare style, and it's, you know, it's not for everyone. And I think sometimes it can be quite sort of a jaded tone. Sometimes.
Well, I think that, or I think people can read it as it being oversimplified and.
Oh, and therefore not as good.
And then not as good. And then it allows the kind of snobbery to sort of creep in. And, you know.
But then I find myself thinking, but like, that thing of like, can somebody be the voice of a generation, or, you know, if they're put. Like, you think, well, you can't argue with so many people having to respond to it. But then I was like, yeah, but would I apply to that? How would I feel about that with, like, say, the Kardashians or something? I think is kind of, you know what I mean? So, it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to know.
I suppose as well, if somebody is appointed the voice of a generation, all those other people in the generation are going to kind of bridle. She's not our voice, just out of pure contrarianism. Yeah. And also, I suppose, with, I think, Irish people and our success stories, we have a very complicated relationship with our countrymen who are successful. You know, isn't that funny? Like, it's the begrudgery, I suppose, that we're so famous for. It is a bit of a national sport. Oh my God, we've talked so much. Will we do a quick binge it? I mean, bet in or bin it? Are you bet into anything, Leah?
Well, as you know, I contacted you both having listened to the first episode of Louis Theroux's podcast to be like, have you listened to this yet? Are you going to soon so we could talk about it? Because I had lots of thoughts. I'm not going to bet in or bin it, because I have a terror of being cancelled, my small so on my online self as it is, by Louis Theroux and John Ronson.
You think they would cancel you personally?
I don't think
they're malicious.
Well, either way, I'm not saying anything that would warrant cancelling. But so I watched it on like day three, I think, of a work tunnel where I was doing these 12-hour days. So I was pretty kind of rage-filled by the time I watched it. I'd listened to it even. But anyway, so it's the episode one of Louis Theroux's Grounded podcast for the BBC. So he was about to start making a new documentary where he talked to celebrities, and obviously Corona grounded him, so now he's doing it. There definitely is some video footage of it, but it's a podcast. And his first guest is John Ronson, who they kind of posit themselves as like both really admiring of each other, but also slightly kind of in competition. Now, I'm aware, like, I wasn't familiar with John Ronson at all until Sophie brought me to one of his live shows. That is literally all I've consumed of him. It was brilliant, but that's where I begin and end. Okay, so sat down, and quite early on in the podcast, they're talking about how they're getting on in lockdown, and Louis Theroux says something like, I mean, I'm quite enjoying it, you know, it's quite nice, like, I don't really like socialising, and I nearly flung the laptop out the window, because at that moment I just thought, anyone who's enjoying this or doesn't mind it or isn't bothered, I can't get on board with this. So
so kind of persevere. So I kind of, I think that just set the tone for, because they were talking about it this morning on my schoolgirl WhatsApp and everyone was like, wasn't it great? And blah, blah, blah. Like, I had a completely, what, do you not remember the time he said this? And I just came across as really grinchy. But anyway, so they then start talking about, have you had a row yet with your spouse in lockdown? And Louis Theroux's row, avocado related, Jen, is that his wife said the other day, where's the last avocado? And he goes, in my belly.
In my,
and obviously she wanted to kill him. You know when you've imagined, you've already imagined eating something and then you go,
yeah.
So John Ronson's route was that he wanted to get a bird feeder and his wife was like, no, that's ridiculous because we'll get rats. And they had a big row about it. She went off and socially distanced, chatted to the neighbour who agreed with her. So she came back. But his kind of point was like, we weren't rowing about the same thing. She was literally rowing about the bird feeder. I was rowing about the fact that, like, I am an individual and I will not be told. Which, like, two things. A, I was like, oh, John, stop. Like, you're such a, you're such an individual. You won't be told about the bird feeder. Like, that's the most pathetic stance I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, I read it that he was kind of like, he wouldn't be told on a kind of like, on a really macro level, that like he was,
oh, he meant that, but like using a bird feeder example, it's just like you're impressing no one with that stance. But then also I did just feel like, John, you're all of us, like we're all rowing about, like in our house this week we're rowing about how many glasses people are using. Like, we're not really rowing about that, you know what I mean? Me shouting at the person in the street, like, we're all there where it's like that micro thing, you're like, I'm ready to fight to the death over this. I'm gonna go there. And actually, so I thought that was quite brilliant. And then my last little takeaway from it was Louis Theroux was kind of talking about how he doesn't mind lockdown because he doesn't really like going out. And he said, made some comment about, my wife kind of, she organises our social life and I just kind of row in behind her. And I just, in my head, was like, that's called emotional labour, Louis, you'll find there. That's not charming.
You went very, I'm amazed.
I know, I think that Leah may not be talking about the podcast.
I'm fairly sure Leah's
not talking about, talking about the bird feeder.
I mean, I can now see how completely over the top this
You've
was.
Had it quite an outsized reaction.
Like, yeah, but you know, I think that's also all this week where we're like, I'm getting this annoyed over nothing. Like,
I know.
I'm just so tired right now.
This whole lead up, Leah, to this, I was like, she's going to mention it. She's going to mention the most annoying thing about this fucking podcast. And you didn't mention it. I thought this is...
What is it?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was innocuous. Fine.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. I would still recommend it as a listen. But yeah. Sorry, go on.
But John Ronson had his phone on loud.
Thank you.
Like, receiving constantly. Like, he's
if
a broadcaster.
If you see the video footage, he's got it like this. He's literally holding it to his ear. It's bizarre.
He's a television person.
I did begin to wonder, is this 101. Is he fucking with Louis
Theroux? Because remember, Louis made reference at one point to the fact that they had this, they were in competition.
Yes.
And Ron brilliantly was like, I really hadn't noticed.
I know.
I mean, it was the best.
So good.
Yeah.
He hung it out to dry.
John Ronson definitely won it, the whole thing.
The whole interaction.
Yeah, he really did. I mean,
you're right.
It was really enjoyable.
Like on purpose phone alerts on.
It's just my mum, sorry.
That was such a power energy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go on, the Ronson. And we know
again,
that historically, like, John Ronson can hold a grudge like no one else.
Oh, really?
Like,
God, I hope he doesn't listen to this and come.
I know a lot of his work, because I genuinely,
I'm aware.
Sometimes I don't know when to just pull back with consuming people, and I follow his son Joel on Instagram. I know all about Elaine, his wife. I am literally terrifying. I wrote a column in the Sunday Indo about John Ronson once, and Instagrammed about it, and John Ronson followed me. Wait, no, answered me. He said, if you're such a big fan, why don't you follow me on Twitter?
I
was like,
you've never let us forget.
Oh my
this
God.
I'm gonna take,
I felt like that was revealing
again, I think he's excellent. It's a great podcast.
definitely listen. But anyway, like,
I was in a bad place when I listened to it.
He has written a lot about one incident from his adolescence where he was bullied by some kids in his secondary school who threw him in a lake after school one day. And I thought, like, I read a piece he'd written about it for The Guardian, like, years ago. Then I, sometime later, heard him on a segment on This American Life, talking about the same story, but like just a new angle on the same story. And then I heard another interview with him where he was talking about the story again. And I was like, oh my God, like John Ronson is a really petty fucker. Like, he does not let shit go. Like, he's petty enough to check if I followed him on Twitter and then find out I didn't follow him on Twitter and question it.
Kind of involved some legwork.
It actually involved a bit of legwork. He is petty enough to have never been able to forgive these adolescent boys for being pricks in their adolescence. And he's trotted it out on every conceivable platform since. He also, one of his other This American Life stories that he did that was actually really funny was about going to his school reunion and confronting these guys and basically kind of confronting them with like, I'm John Ronson now, I'm a really big success. And he is fucking hilarious because he has this self-awareness about that side of his pettiness, I guess. And one of, and he was kind of like, I think he more or less was like, what do you think of that then? And the guy who had been one of the kids who threw him in a lake when he was a teenager was like, you're obviously as big a prick as ever.
Yeah, this is why we this threw you in the lake the first time.
And he made that story for NPR. No. It was so good. I obviously really enjoyed their whole chat. Because, and I thought he really came off better than I thought he would, because I'm more of a John Ronson fan than a Louis Theroux fan. But I thought Louis was really funny about the rivalry. Like,
did you?
I thought he just jumped into it feet first and was like, yeah, I'm going to kind of, you know, sacrifice myself to this comedy cause.
Do we know who's up next, guys, on that pot?
They have Lenny Henry and Gail Porter and lovely, I think Boy George. Lenny Henry and Boy George, he said it turned him down in the past or he'd been chasing them for ages and they've agreed to do this. So, yeah.
I thought it was really good as well on insight into, you know, how they both kind of operate with this kind of, like Louis Theroux would have kind of almost sort of like facile persona where he'd be sometimes kind of naive to the interviewee. And as a viewer, you'd always be kind of like
onto him
or like, is there kind of a knowingness about it here? Mm. And I thought it was really interesting, the insight into that side of their working process and the story about the couple with the tiger.
Worth it. There were some brilliant behind alone. The scenes stories.
And Lou is so surprisingly good at accents.
The Jen, I thought of you actually. The was it an ape or something?
That it was the ape.
That's right. Oh, sorry, that was very good.
I was thinking the tiger of the guy. What's that Joe Netflix Exotic. Show that? I thought it was quite interesting just watching, like, I read an interview he did where he just kind of he talked about the interview process where like it's completely different interviewing like a personality because you have to show how much you know about them. Do you know what I mean? It looks kind of ignorant if you're who are you. So it's a really, and how it is a really different process from what you kind of described there. So for his normal thing would be to at least pretend that he doesn't know or have a kind of a certain innocence that allows him to kind of wade in to things. And it was kind of, it's what is interesting as well, watching someone who is such a persona and who gets so much, you know, it's Louis Theroux doing this, like that's the point of all his stuff, then kind of interviewing someone who is an equal persona. And like sometimes occasionally on questions I was like, okay, stop, let him answer, like, you know, it was kind of an interesting dynamic between the two of them. But yeah, there's brilliant anecdotes actually, that one about the ape throwing itself at the window running out.
Yeah, amazing. They're like, I think it's time for us to go. Very
on
good
that, I better probably go because I better go, I've got an interview in about 25 minutes, so I better go eat some food. Well, guys, so lovely,
excellent, that was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Would you like to talk very briefly about where to pre-order your fabulous forthcoming book?
Sure, Easons is probably the best place because you enter a competition for a stay for two people in the Clifford Lions with spa treatments. Cut that line down.
Tell us the name of your book. You're like,
straight into this, what you could be in to win if you pre-order a copy of Things Fall Apart.
Thank you. Yes, How to Fall Apart. And it is out on the 11th of June, but you can pre-order it now from Easons.
Fabulous. Can't wait. Yeah, I have read it and it is absolutely brilliant. I took it to bed and devoured it in one sitting. And I am a person who values my sleep, I would say, above the lives of my family. And I stayed awake. And I think everyone needs it. Like, it was always relevant. because we all suffer hard times in our lives. And this book is Leah writing really beautifully about coming through a separation and kind of picking up the pieces. And now it's just even more relevant because we've had a kind of a global falling apart, a communal fall apart. So it's just the most comforting book, and like, just pre-order it now.
Will you come do all my interviews with me? That was very well put. Guys, thanks for having me. Bye bye.
Let's bin COVID-19.
Do you have anything to
bin? I have a new bet in. As you know, was passionately bet into making the cut and devastated when I finished it. And I have now moved over to Netflix, moved over to a virtually identical show called Next in Fashion. Have you watched it?
Of course. This is what I thought
I was talking about.
You were trying to recommend. I was like, brilliant, I've already watched this. Homework done. And then an hour before we started recording, I was like, shit,
you're talking about something.
That's not the right one.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. So Next in Fashion is hosted by Alexa Chung and Tan France. And it's the same, basically, same show in every way, just less money driving it. Just noticeably lower budgets. It's so funny because having just come from making the cut where Heidi Klum, no joke, every 8 minutes references the $1 million that these designers are, you know, it potentially going to win. Side note, every time she said it, I was like, Heidi is making $1 million
per
minimum
episode.
Per episode. I can't cope with her pretending to be excited about $1 million.
And being in an episode for 4 seconds.
Exactly. And so anyway, over in Next in Fashion, they're in it to win $250,000.
Not the same
rate. But otherwise, pretty identical. Same. Pretty happy I found it. Did you like it?
Yeah, it was fine. It was just like, it was totally grand, average show. I really liked the winner of that competition. Won't spoil it for you. But I thought the winner was pretty excellent. And it was just a pretty kind of... pretty average show.
Yeah, I know it's untaxing, but it's like, it's a relief for me because I think I like emotionally connected so deeply to making the cut. Even all its completely ridiculous elements, such as Tim and Heidi's kind of weird interludes where they'd go and play in a Japanese video arcade for no reason. Like, I had just become so invested in it that it was a huge relief to find out that there was a kind of a low-rent version that I could get stuck into. That's it.
Well, perfect. I'll tell you, I've just decided in my head as you were talking there, and I was definitely listening to you, I decided that I had two things teetering on the edge of the bin.
Well, let's go.
Now... remember Killing Eve?
Yeah.
It's back again.
Is
it? I am not.
How did
yeah.
you get by me?
Surprise, everyone. It's back again.
This is
third
series.
Because I got by
then.
Everybody. This is the third series. Teetering on the edge of the bin for me. I haven't given enough time. I only watched one episode, but it hasn't gripped me like the way the other two series did. I mean, it's the same characters. But we'll see. It's still... And fucking Ozark. Did you go there with Ozark?
I binned that long ago.
It's so bleak. Like, I just finished series two, and obviously series three is just out. It's, I'm not sure I'm able for it. Like, it's just hopeless.
Yeah.
You know? Hopeless anxiety.
It's without hope. And, like, I just don't, I love Laura Linney usually. I just don't like her in it. And.
Yeah.
Like the two, basically, you need something to latch to in one of these kind of, you know, bleak landscapes, and there's nothing in there. I have another bet in that was gorgeous this week. It's actually quite high culture for us. Did you catch any of the Dear Ireland series that the Abbey Theatre put together? It is still available on their YouTube channel, and it is... God, how many contributors were there? I think it was 40 or 60 pairs of writers and actors who were commissioned by the Abbey in the middle of March. They turned it around so fast. It's actually so impressive. They commissioned these writers and actors to create a piece of work within the kind of constraints of lockdown. The kind of theme was Dear Ireland, and there was just some absolutely brilliant pieces of like theatre, I guess, but it was all, the actors were self-shooting, the writers were writing remotely and working with the actors remotely, and there was, Blind Boy did a piece for it, Felly Speaks had a piece in it, Nancy Harris, who, full disclosure, is my cousin, but like I barely know her, and I don't even like her, she had a piece in it that was brilliant, and I thought, like, it was really interesting, for example. So Nancy had a show in the Gate that was closed a few days after it premiered due to COVID. So it's actually, it's just so, it's such a good snapshot, really, of all these people who were working and their careers are in theatre, which is just such an immediate art form, and it demands an audience and it demands the engagement that is now completely impossible. And I just thought it was so cool that like our national theatre just like really mobilised really fast, commissioned all this beautiful work, and everyone watched it kind of live. So it actually felt like the kind of communal experience that theatre does feel like. And it was really, really cool. And I hope that there is some part of that setup. So what it was is we watched on a live stream on YouTube, and like people could comment on a sort of scrolling side chat about what they thought of the pieces that were going on. And it was really moving. Like all the work was kind of, you know, connected to what's going on. And I mean, I wasn't crying, but like if I could, if I was capable of such a thing, if it wasn't medicationalized out of me, I would have been in tears. So I loved that. So brilliant. Catch back up with that on YouTube at the Abbey Theatre.
I can
YouTube.
See it here. That's it. It's right there.
Amazing talent. Like just, it's actually, that was what I felt so incredibly proud of, was just like, oh my God, like in terms of population, we are a tiny country and we have such a huge voice in terms of the arts.
Amazing.
I'm welling myself up. So I don't know if I'm going to bid anything.
Oh, that's a great tone to go out of, and we can all check that out.
It's been a joy.
Thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, you too.